Thank you. Thanks, Shirley. So it gives me a great pleasure to be here. This is probably my fourth or fifth talk at KITP on topological insulator, and it turned out I have always been lucky to start out with a slide that has some new result on it, and it's magical that how it's timed. So theorists must have some interesting intuition what is going on. So somehow it's a mystery. Okay, so good. So since this is the first experimental talk for this program and workshop, I'll mention some of the basics of the experiments and get to the interesting stuff. I mean, the more recent stuff that some of you may not have seen and has not appeared in the archive or as a publication. So let me start out acknowledging my students and collaborators. And my students and postdocs from the core team, David Dong, Andrew Yuki, Suyang. They're the people on the ground, and we collaborate with a number of people around the world, utilizing different facilities from Berkeley to Zurich. And we also are now closely working with Huan Ong's group on transport studies and correspondence between spectroscopy and transport, now that this insulating, the topological insulators are becoming, it's becoming possible to have more insulating. This is the first resistivity profile of the first topological insulator I presented at KITP. So there's enormous four orders of magnitude in last few years. So that's encouraging. So that's making transport becoming possible. And this is just, I think it's tip of the iceberg, because material scientists, in my view, they're only recently getting serious about it for funding reasons. So as the fundings are officially available to do improve topological insulator materials, so they can see more interesting curves where things are getting better. Okay, so much of what I'll show, the materials homegrown, Bob Culver's group, and some MB samples from Penn State and Purdue. We're also getting into looking at interfaces and heterostructures, working with the group at Rutgers, and on various first principle calculations. I have been working with Oren Bunsell's group for quite some time. Okay, so this is the overview of what is going on, putting it in connection to the whole field. So there is quantum Hall effect, there's the Chern number physics. I don't surely cover the theory, so I'm not going into the theory at all, but just say a few words on this slide. In the quantum Hall case, we have a time reversal broken state. It's by the magnetic field. The edge state is edge power correspondence. And since you have a magnetic field, its three-dimensional generalization is difficult if you want the boundary states, meaning surface states, to be topologically protected. So by getting rid of the magnetic field, if you can find a topological state where you don't require an external magnetic field or flux, then you can have the boundary states, and then surprisingly, there is a three-dimensional protected state. I mean, the surface states are protected by the topology of the bulk band structure, or band, I mean the bulk wave functions. So much of this talk will focus on elaborating what is happening, what are these pictures, and how they tell us about the properties of the surface states and how they connect to the topology. And then what are the new areas that have emerged, right? Now you can think of what would be the fractional quantum Hall effect of this topological surface state, because now this is a 2D electron gas. You can think of it like that. And then what if I turn the sample superconducting or magnet? So what happens to this surface state? So there's enormous literature out there, I think, on the archive. There are like 800 papers, more than 800 papers if you search TI. And one of my students counted that about, surprisingly, 200 of them are actually experiments. And they're mostly talking about all aspects of this three-dimensional topological insulating materials. Okay, so as I said, so we were, the surface states were first presented at KITP before they were published or posted anywhere. And so this is an interesting connection to KITP. As I said, somehow there is some magical thing. I come to KITP and it looks like I have some interesting thing to present. So at that point, we were actually interested in bismuth tin antimony thermoelectric compounds. And since we do ARPES, we were struck by the fact that they have surface states and they could not be we could not get rid of the surface state. So I even announced Dirac physics beyond graphene in this very room. Okay, so the quantum Hall, quantum spin Hall effect, one can think of as two copies of the quantum Hall effect, counterpropagating edge state. But in the three dimension, the spin Hall effect, it's not the proper term for it, because you, from experimental point of view, you're not seeing spin Hall, this edge behavior, and that's because you have such pair in all directions. And what is even more interesting, the edge of three-dimensional topological insulator by itself is more quite interesting. So there's a whole lot of excitement understanding even the edge of the three-dimensional state. So most of you know about this edge bulk correspondence. This Chern number idea provides this first correspondence. So so this, in fact, the original experiments in the 80s led to this type of topological thinking. So the topologically protected state has this intimate connection between edge and bulk. So one can ask this question. So we historically measured these topological quantum numbers or Chern numbers by doing transport, magnetotransport, and that's how, in fact, they were discovered. And so one can ask how to measure this, the analogous in some way, these topological invariants or topological quantum numbers in case of topological insulators. So in a most general case, at least 3D, there are four invariants, and one can think of like these are topological order parameters, not necessarily, not related to broken symmetry, but they're tied to the band structure in some way. So since this is Z2, so this each invariant can take two values, so there are four of them. So in three dimensions, there are 16 distinct insulators. So if all of them are trivial, all zeros, then I have 15 distinct topological insulators. And now there are theoretical ideas that even the weak topological insulators are not that weak, like Eddie Stern is arguing around that. And in fact, we found the realization of a three-dimensional weak thing, so I'll get to that at some point. So it would be interesting to check, are weak insulators really weak? Okay, so the transport is not necessarily quantized. These are actually tied to the band structure in some interesting way, tied to their parity. And it turns out one can actually, by looking at photo emission matrix elements, we can look at the parity of the bands and connect it to that. But then the main idea is to do this edge bulk correspondence. What happens to the bulk bands do they invert, or are the appearance of edge, unusual edge behavior connected to the inversion of the bulk band, this parity idea? So all of this can be tested, these ideas, these invariants and numbers. And there is also a magnetoelectric definition of the first invariant. So one can also do that in a response function way. So, but it's in some limit, it's equivalent. So, but it's a good starting point to do that from the definition Fu and King gave us. So this is tying to the original theory. Okay, so so what we are doing is that our goal is to measure all degrees of freedom of the electron, energy, momentum, spin, and not only all degrees of freedom on the surface, also on the bulk, and see how they connect and how they change. Because some sample may go through a topological phase transition, what happens to the bulk, what happens to the surface. So we need sensitivity, not only to the surface, but also to the bulk. And I'll show that we can check this bulk band connectivity. So the photoemission spectroscopy, I don't want to give a detailed introduction to that, but this is like photoelectric effect. And like any scattering process, you have some conservation loss. We're utilizing this conservation loss to connect to the beam parameters to the microscopic electron quantum numbers, energy, momentum, and spin. So, so after analyzing the energy and momentum, we are having the electron go through some sort of spin-dependent scattering, which allows us to isolate. So the basic idea is similar to David Ashalom's extrinsic spin Hall effect. So this is goes back to Mott scattering. I can, based on the LS coupling, I can isolate these things, these spin channels. And experimentally, we're actually not measuring the absolute magnitude. It's less meaningful. We are mostly interested in this relative polarization at each k point, at each energy. So in other words, I look at an electron beam coming which has some specific energy in the solid, and it has some momentum, and I look at the polarization of that beam and look at the, basically look at the net polarization. So this is how so that's the spin channel, but how do I isolate bulk and surface? That's a big topic by itself in ARPAS, and to some extent you can isolate them in certain systems. So it turned out we were lucky that this bismuth antimony compound, it has a three-dimensional bulk band structure. So that means it has, the bulk bands are dispersive in the z direction. So kinematically, if I change the photon energy, then I can scan, set at, I can scan the third direction, a direct momentum space direction perpendicular to the surface. And if I, so what we want to see that whatever we are measuring, how much of, which part of this, I have this overall signal, and we don't start out knowing what is, which electrons are two-dimensional, which electrons are three-dimensional. So by doing this thing, by checking this KZ dependence, we can figure out that the non-dispersive signal has to do with the two-dimensional electron wave packet, and the three-dimensional electrons disperse in some particular way. And so, of course, with ARPAS, you don't get absolute bulk sensitivity, but you get some sort of relative measure that, so these are, these electrons are three-dimensional wave packet, these electrons are two-dimensional wave packet. So that that is like a first-order basis for isolating the signal and focus where we want to focus. So in other words, we want to figure out two things. One is, how much of it is the, for example, in this all these topological insulators, we want to see whether the bulk band is crossing the Fermi level. If it is crossing the Fermi level, then it's an intrinsically metal, right? So in this data, you can see the bulk band is not crossing the Fermi level, so there is a bulk band gap. So that's important. And then what we see is that when you are at the Fermi level, we have we have this Fermi surface sitting there. So it's not so uncommon to have Fermi surfaces on the surface of a band insulator. These are surface states. But what is unusual is that these surface states. What is unusual about the surface states is how they connect to the bulk band continuum and their spin properties. So once we then this is why we need to do spin. Once we do the spin, which by itself is.
So just a naive question on here. You have a band insulator and a surface state. So the surface state is conducting the current. Can you measure this current, or is it very?
I'll get to that near the end. For the time being, I'll do that spectroscopically.
Okay.
Yeah. The answer is yes, but I'll not get to that until near the end. Yes, we can see quantum oscillation from the surface. I mean, only recently. Okay. So then the idea is that what we see is that these pockets have, as you go around the pockets, this polarization direction is not changing. Spin does not, this polarization vector is not rotating, except at the gamma point. And this rotation, so then it looks like if I think of in terms of a wave function picking up a phase for in a transport sense, then these Fermi pockets, they're not contributing to their contribution to the phase is like 2 pi. So the only unusual part, non-trivial part, is this one. And you can see right away that in the beginning it may look like Rashba, but it's not, because Rashba you have a pair. So that the band topology is different from Rashba, although there is some similarity. So then we can see that what we did on this particular compound, we put tellurium on the surface to raise the chemical potential. It electron dopes the system. So then you can see that these pockets, they will disappear in as you raise the chemical potential. But this guy, I'll show in the next coming slide, that this guy is not disappearing. Okay? So then let's first focus on this center part, because that's where the unusual physics is. So then if we take some high resolution spin resolve measurement, we can see that the K plus state, it goes to the down spin detector, and K minus goes to the up spin detector. And it's, in other words, apart from the variation in intensities, which has to do with normalization and matrix elements, there is time reversal symmetry. So we know elementary quantum mechanics that K plus spin up goes to K minus spin down. Okay, and then we can check that at all energies. Now this is, we're showing one particular cut. So then if we repeat that all over the Fermi surface, repeat this measurement at many energies, many different energies, and all over the Fermi surface, then I can get this, how the spin vector or polarization vector tangents. It's not always a tangent, but we can get this angle. So then that allows us to get a phase, and that phase is close to pi experimentally. So as I showed that if you put tellurium on the surface of bismuth antimony, then you can sink these pockets. Once you sink these pockets, then so the interesting physics is a single Dirac cone, and this is unpaired. So this is very, very interesting, that there is a single Dirac cone. There are other stuff, but you can get rid of them in some way. and they don't contribute to the phase. So this is a thermoelectric compound, and many people studied thermoelectric, and they were all thermal. Many of these thermoelectric papers, they studied all these compounds together: bismuth antimony, bismuth selenide, and bismuth telluride. So one way to isolate this Dirac cone is to artificially dope. But if you look at the neighboring materials, then the surface potential is different. Since the surface potential is different, you expect that some of these satellite neighboring pockets, they may localize by just because of the different surface potential. And this is how we discovered this bismuth selenide tellurite series. So the difference is that it's also a single Dirac cone, but it does not have those other stuff. And another advantage is that it has a larger gap. It's not just it's not a small gap system. So this is very similar to pure antimony, except that antimony is a semi-metal. The bands overlap. The surface states are robust in the sense that they're sharp, as long as they don't overlap with the bulk band continuum. So this is how. Then there are many variants of this material, and there are all these interesting stuff. This is so then we started to focus on this series, which it's not necessary to surface dope. Okay, so now we want to do the spin and see what happens to the polarization of these electrons. So then if we take a cut on top, so this is corresponding to that cut, so spin goes clockwise, and then we take cuts here. So then the series of cuts, they show that as you go past the Dirac node, then the chirality will change. It then goes left-handed. Okay? So then, so there are many ways to treat that. So you can put Fermi level in the gap. You can do that chemically in the bulk by chemical tuning the bulk. You can do that by electrostatic gating, or you can do that by surface doping. But what is interesting is that across the gap, so this is what we confirm, that there is no matter where you place the chemical potential, there will be this unpaired Dirac fermion with spin momentum locking. Okay, so now we looked at all these other compounds, and this became a tool. By then, it became a tool. Many people started to work, use this method to identify many topological insulators, and now there are maybe 50 of them, probably more. So then I'm picking the first one that demonstrated how to do this. So then in this compound, I can think of in a real space picture is that K plus, it's spin down. So this is what we're measuring, this spin down signal. And K minus is spin up. So that means, there's something unusual about this type of surface state that the spin and momentum are locked. As I showed, the time reversal symmetry holds. So then time reversal symmetry is already protecting them. So there is no way to unlock them on the surface. And all other 2D electron gas we know of, they always come with 4 degrees of freedom. So it's possible to localize them. So the spin momentum locking is the central to topological order. So then we wanted to, again, make sure experimentally that this locking is not just an artifact of one particular energy. And my pointer is not always working very well, but that it actually holds all over the gap, inside the gap. Okay? And so this is just one cut. Then there are many cuts. So in reality, the electrons are moving in all these directions. So it's a very different 2D, it's a different 2D electron gas. But this state is everywhere. So the spin momentum locked. So one can think of this topological insulator as a empty metallic box. So the electrons cannot go inside because the bulk is insulating, but they stay on the surface But then they have this, their spin and momentum locked. Their spin momentum locked by time reversal symmetry. So you cannot, so it's a very strong protection. So then to confirm that this is not some artifact of our specific measurement, because this type of measurements are also new even in condensed matter physics in general. So then we want to make sure that this locking is a universal thing. It's not dependent on some Fermi energy or any of that stuff. So we want to scan through the gap and look at all energies. So for example, so this is the one I showed. So then this locking we observe. So this is, I'm just, instead of showing lots of data set, I'm just showing a cartoon, but the Fermi surface is real data set. So then I can see that this locking holds. So no matter how I cut, it's locked. And one can see that since this line is all up, this line is down, this scattering, this direct back scattering is not allowed. I mean, this transition is forbidden. And then if I go below the Dirac node, so this is another point I picked, so then this is reversing. Below the node, it's K minus is now down, K plus is up. So then this confirms this scenario that it's not an artifact of our experiment.
So Sahib, are you always looking on the sort of high symmetry directions? I mean, so if you're off a high symmetry direction, then the arrow isn't exactly again.
Yeah, I'll show that.
I guess my question is, can you look at how that depends on the energy?
Energy, yes. That's the next slide. Yes. So this is what Charlie was asking. So far, what happened is I was showing something, all Fermi surfaces near the Dirac node. Okay, so what happens as I move away? And indeed, that's what we see, that as we move away, so then that to us in the beginning, that was less interesting because as you move away, you are into the conduction band. So then there is additional scattering channels available, but it comes as a resonant state. So you can still look at that to some extent. In some materials, you do see them very clearly. Yeah.
So I have a question. If you do the same measurement on a conventional surface state in a conventional semiconductor, would you see any spin texture?
If you have rush bar, then you'll see that, but then this is why I went through this detail, that in a rush bar system, you'll fall into a gap as you do this scan. So in other words, in a rush bar system, in fact, we use rush bar system to calibrate the detector.
What do you mean by rush bar system? You mean just...
Where you have, it's probably easier for me to draw.
You always have mirror symmetry broken at the surface, right? So you
yes,
have some rush.
But the rush bar is always giving you a, I mean, there's always a, let me find it. So the idea is that you have conduction band, you have valence band, and in all these materials, what we see, it's something like that. In conventional semiconductors and other stuff, what happens, you see this type of thing. This point is still protected by time reversal, and you have other stuff like that. But as you lower chemical potential, now you can make the surface gap. That's one thing. The other thing is now that you have two spins, so your phase is 2 pi, and whereas in this case it's pi. So that's the main difference.
Short question.
Yeah.
This tilting business. I guess that it's not protected, the tilting angle, it's just the phase that accommodates around
yeah.
in the plane is protected.
Right. Yeah.
But on certain high symmetry directions, I think it is, so the direction, so if you're on a direction that has a mirror plane, and I think the mirror plane fixes that the spin has to point perpendicular to that mirror plane. And so there are certain ones where it, and there are a lot, you know, there are six mirror planes going around, so some of them are locked, but not all.
And it's got to be a weak thing, right? Because it's not protected by time reversal.
It's protected by the crystal symmetry.
By the crystal symmetry, right. So that is a weaker protection because the crystals are not always perfect. So, yeah. Okay, so then, so this is, those are the details. I mean, these are all good questions because they sort of explain this slide that, so there is a detail to this protection and there's the crystal symmetry comes in. But near the node, this is very simple and it's just like that. You can draw a simple picture. So in other words, if you want to do transport, you want to do that near the node, that's where you can see, you maximize the topological, signal, or topological aspect of the transport signal, you'll see that near the node. Not for the particular reasons we discussed, for many other reasons, I'll get to that as move on. So far, I only focus on the surface state properties. But is it tied to, isn't topological insulator, it's a topology of the bulk, right? So is it tied to the change in the bulk topology? So in other words, I start out with a topological insulator. I engineer the bulk band structure in a way and drive it out of the bulk, out of the non-trivial topological state. Do I see surface states disappear? And their properties are now different. And this is what motivated this experiment. So we start out here. This is a variant of Bismuth selenite, all the other stuff in there, but it's basically a topological, it's a more complex chemical version of Bismuth selenite. So I see this, this stuff I just talked about in detail, that I have this type of Dirac cone, this type of texture. So then, what I want to do, I want to reduce the spin orbit coupling. By going from sulfur to selenium, I'm reducing spin orbit coupling. And I want to see that as I lower the spin orbit coupling, my Dirac cone and all that fancy stuff will disappear. Does that really happen? Can I see that in the through the bulk channel? Because the bulk is where the topology is actually defined clearly. Okay, so this is what we are doing. So when we are in this regime, then we see this surface structure, and then we reduce. So when this is now entirely sulfur compound, when we are into the sulfur compound, what we are seeing in the RPS data, I did not label these states. Now, I mean, the totally non-inverted regime, what I'm saying is just conduction band and valence band. So this is just a conventional semiconductor. It's well known. People have studied it before. It has a gap, band gap. So this is the valence band, this is the conduction band, and there's a band gap, and there's nothing interesting on the surface, except for some resonance state, but those states are the same character as the conduction and valence band. Okay? So now what happens, let's think of increasing spin orbit interaction. So now I increase spin orbit interaction, and then what I see that the gap is decreasing. The chemical potential of this different composition are at different places because they're made in a separate, chemically synthesized in a separate way, but what we should focus on is just the gap. So then the gap, looks like the gap is decreasing as I increase spin orbit in the system, but then I still have a gap, effective gap in the system, but I have a more powerful probe. I can also look at the spin channel of this state, I mean spin properties of these bands, and what we see is that they have degenerate spins. They have two spins per signal, per state. So then, per k value. So then, these are actually bulk bands. So then that's how we identify that this is conduction band. And then we do the matrix elements, RPS matrix elements, that further identifies that these are actually bulk bands, what you expect from just LDA or any simple band calculation. So these are not surface states. These are actually bulk bands we are seeing in RPS. Okay? So as we increase spin orbit, this gap is decreasing. And then at some point, the gap has closed. And then the intensity on these sites are growing. So then once we do a spin RPS, then we see that instead of two spin states, now I have a single spin state. And now another thing we note that this gap is, so this is the top of the conduction band, I mean the bottom of the conduction, but this is the top of the valence band. So the conduction band is decreasing and the valence band is increasing. So the gap is decreasing. Okay, so when the gap has decreased to zero and probably to negative, and only then I start to see a clean spin texture.
So when you get close to the transition, can you tell that the bulk is looking like a Dirac?
You can see that we haven't done done it very clearly, because in this experiment we did not know to start with where will that happen.
So, because if you could really tune and get right to the transition, then
right.
It'd be interesting to look at the critical points.
Right, that's the next thing.
And then,
yeah.
And then also, you know, there are predictions for how the surface states. If you're at this critical point,
right.
Then what are the surface states look like near?
Right.
Near the 3D
Dirac point. Actually, it turns out this particular way of engineering spin orbit there is a better way to do that. We are doing that not on this system, but we figured out a better way where we can access the.
There's also, you might not expect it to be a perfectly sharp transition. Theoretically,
maybe a gapless phase. Yeah, extended phase. Yeah.
So you don't see any evidence.
Just continuing on this point, and I just eyeball this, it looks like I have these dot bands on the left hand side, and then I tune six, and it's as if the sort of outside of the dot bands is just increasing in intensity.
Right.
Now we know, of course, a bit delusional. What Charlie was just referring to, I can likely imagine that at the transition point, the dot bands and the surface band could have kind of different dispersions.
Yeah.
Is it so, and why don't we see that? Why is it so smooth?
I think that one has to scan in the z direction. They are different because they are now becoming kind of in the overlapping region. So. I think the distinction will come when we do the Z scan, then we should be able to see that clearly. This is work in progress. Yeah, but this.
Another simple question.
Yeah.
So you have a sketch on the blackboard on the right side about the, what you expect in a generic Rushbach couple.
Semiconductor.
Why don't we see that on the right?
Yeah, so this is the first guess I had that if I drive the system out of the inverted regime, I'll see Rushbach on the surface. That was my expectation before doing the experiment. It turns out this particular system does not show Rushbach, and I don't know why it doesn't. But there are a few other systems that do show Rushbach, and it could be that the Rushbach is inside, it's almost degenerate with the conduction band. The surface, it depends on the surface termination. If the electric field is not very strong, it will not come out so strongly, because there are Rushbach systems where they don't fall out so much, they just stay near the conduction band. So if the electric field is small, then they may be just merely degenerate with conduction. Xiao Liang? Yeah.
So it seems the trivial part is a dope, right?
So the trivial part is doped, yeah.
So I think that's why the Rushbach is not so strong, because when you have a bulk doping which is not so small, then the surface...
Yeah, but then, I thought about that. In gold, which is just a metal, there is bulk band, Rushbach comes out very clear in gold, or tungsten. And they're just just metal. And you can still see the Rushbach very clearly. So I think there are some surface details that dominate that determine the Rushbach part.
Is that a typo on the bottom? Is it bismuth telluride or bismuth TL?
No, this is thallium. This is not typo.
So it's
thallium.
Oh, it is. So I see. Okay.
Yeah, it turns out that without thallium, you cannot do this sulfur selenium and have the phase diagram realized. This is just chemistry.
I see. But
it's not tellurium. It's thallium. TL.
I see. So bismuth, thallium, selenium.
Right. Topological. Yeah. Okay, so so this is again work in progress. You can see we just measured five things, but it sounds promising. So we plan to explore this in detail, that what happens to this topological the topological phase transition on the surface and the bulk, and at the topological critical point, as Shirley pointed out, that there will be a 3D Dirac cone, and then we can do that. Would be the first realization of a 3D Dirac fermion in condensed matter. In all other systems, there is some other band coming into play. So in this case, this is a clean system. So you could do transport, because now that 3D Dirac cone is the bulk band. So that should be very interesting by itself. And then we're also trying to magnetize it and see what happened, what is the magnetization response of the 3D Dirac cone. Yeah, Jan, question?
Oh, yeah. I had a question. So I was wondering, so how insulating is this topological insulator?
So you can improve just like Bismuth selenide. It depends how you grow. But for this type of experiments, we did not put any effort to insulate that very much.
But does from the point of view of this measurement, does it even matter whether it's a true insulator or not, or basically?
At this point, we're just looking at band topology and spin texture and all that. I don't think it does. It's not really that high resolution to have correspondence with transport in terms of those details. But in principle, it should. But that should come in the lifetime, like the surface state. If you have bulk states around, then they will not be very sharp. Actually, I'll show examples of that. And then when you when the bulk is really, really good insulating, then the surface states are sharper because they don't have a channel to decay. Okay. Okay. So I meant to say that this is what we want to do. Go to low energies, and this is some further detail that these results are. I mean, it's not just one set of data. We took many sets of data, but not showing them all. So the picture that is emerging, there is a direct gap, there is just textbook semiconductor, and then this is like a textbook topological insulator. So this is very interesting, that the surface state we see, it's really tied to the bulk, what is happening in the bulk. So that convinced me that topological insulators exist. Okay, so then, so these are some details in different topological insulators here. Your Fermi surfaces depend on the potential of the surface potential and also conduction and valence band details. So these are all faces of topological insulator. They may look different, but and this is also a four-dimensional topological insulator. So in four dimension, your boundary would be three-dimensional. So you have spin texture like a hedgehog type of thing. So in fact, it would be interesting if fourth dimension really exists, then there should be a hedgehog Fermi surface in some material. So let's check for string theory predictions. Okay, so then there are now a bit of chemistry, what is going on, because we want to improve these materials, their surfaces, surface properties, and other things, so that we can do other experiments, not just ARPES. So then one can manipulate the Fermi level in many different ways. This is particularly done with surface doping, with molecular gas adsorption on the surface. But now people have demonstrated electrical gating. They can get Fermi level into the gap. There are many other ways to, so you can realize Fermi level in the gap, even if you don't start out with them. So as I mentioned, that the interesting thing about topological insulators is that you have half the degrees of freedom, spin momentum locking, so backscattering is, elastic backscattering is forbidden, but inelastic backscattering is not forbidden, right? So at least, so you have reduced scattering, and on the surface, but the it's only the backscattering part, not the side scattering. Side scattering is allowed. So this has been confirmed, additionally confirmed This process has been additionally confirmed by STM experiments. This is the first experiment from Princeton, Yastani group, but then now many other groups have worked on it. So there the idea is that you don't obviously see that in the raw data, but if you take a Fourier transform of this profile, then you see a pattern. And then if you try to match that with the joint density of states, you see from ARPES, you expect, ignoring spins, you expect this sort of pattern. But if you assign the spins, then this process, of course, is operating. Then you see some extinctions. So then your actual pattern comes out to be similar to what STM has seen. So then this is quasi-particle scattering from the surface confirms this scenario. So at this point, I would like to make a comparison between graphene and topological insulator. So on just on the phase value, just on the phase, you can topological insulators have many phases. They don't always look like graphene, but sometimes they do. But the fundamental difference is topological insulator is new physics. It's a new type of insulator. Whereas in graphene, it is a part of the bulk band structure. It's not, the Dirac cone of graphene is not because of its topology. I mean, it's not a topologically protected Dirac cone. I think from experimental points of view, graphene has this excellent, fantastic material properties, so you can do a whole lot of things, whereas topological insulators are, they have to be searched for, they have to be figured out what they are. So there is a lot of material improvement going on. But graphene, its discovery just started with the material, so right away you can do a lot of things. With topological insulators, first we have to figure out which are the topological insulators, what is their surface property. And now that we figured out, now people are focusing on improving materials. But what is exciting is that in a single particle channel, people thought weakly interacting systems are solved. I mean, it was last century, 100-year-old physics, but there is surprise in a single particle physics. And the surprises may have interesting potential for a lot of different areas. Okay, so I'll focus mostly on the physics part of it. What are the physics directions that are emerging out of this? First by identifying what is unique about topological insulators and not possible in other things. One thing is that the topological effects can be observed at room temperature and no magnetic field. This is what we demonstrated. And remarkably, this particular bismuth selenide compound, even the surface, on the surface, weak electron phonon coupling is very weak. So it looks very similar. Other people have confirmed these results. We published earlier that for some reason, we don't know, but for some reason, the electron phonon coupling is weak. That's good news. So even at high temperature, you have reduced scattering. And then this gallium arsenide and mercury telluride compounds, they're good, nice, they have high mobility, but they're limited to low temperature because the gap is small. So if you want to push something at some higher temperatures, possibly room temperatures, there is a lot of room with these new materials, and figuring out their surface property is interesting. So there are a lot of efforts in manipulating the surface and the bulk and connect it to their, say, mobility or carrier control. So carrier control is easier. You can do bulk or surface doping, as I mentioned before, or electrical gating that will get you to the Dirac node. So you can study Dirac physics there. In this case, topological physics, Dirac physics. And then the surface is more complicated. If you put some stuff on the surface, it's not just, you're creating all sorts of perturbation. It's not just magnetic, you're also you have the surface dopant, it has its own state, and it in, the atom you put, its states interact with the surface state, and there is band bending on the surface, and all sorts of details that need to be worked out. And so this is, there's a experimental frontier, how to understand the interaction of this dopant on the surface. A lot is happening in that frontier. So so the thing I am more interested in is that there is new physics with topological insulators in 3D. That's because you can turn them, as I mentioned in the beginning, that you can turn them into ferromagnet or antiferromagnet, and also superconductivity. And this, that was not possible with the quantum Hall, quantum spin Hall type of thing. You cannot turn them into a superconductor. So for the first time in condensed matter physics, or all of physics, we're studying, we have the way to study interplay of topological order and Brocken symmetry order. And there is a lot of fascinating physics expected when you introduce this Brocken symmetry in addition to the topological physics that's pre-existing. So experimentally, I'm very interested in this part of the physics. So a whole lot of people are working on it, and I don't have time to review all of this, but I want to mention a few remarkable developments in the field. So the topological insulator surface states were identified, and then this Dirac cones were identified, and there's effort to understand the surface magnetism, what happens, and also bulk magnetism. And then bismuth selenide has been made superconducting, and there are very recent claims that this is a topological superconductor, maybe someone even claiming seeing Majorana fermions on the surface. And of course, just like graphene, you can also see quantum Hall effect on the topological insulator surface. And more recently, there are multiple reports of observation of fractional quantum Hall effect on the topological surface, where the idea is that you may get, if unlike the small gap in phi puff, you may get a larger gap, so it may work better. So because otherwise you are stuck with the phi puff. So I have not added that here, but there are all these interesting developments. And then as I mentioned that, it's becoming possible to study and systematically observe this topological phase transition, and maybe some of this stuff has some sort of astrophysical or cosmological analog, so we can sort of do controlled laboratory experiments. So one of the proposals that connects to computing is that there are many proposals for Majorana fermions, but Fu and Kane has this proposal of this proximity effect on the topological insulator surface state. So as an experimentalist, in my understanding, the way I think about it is that when you do proximity effect on a 2D electron gas, you have 4 degrees of freedom. But now, as I showed, you have half the degrees of freedom. Spin momentum is locked. So then you have, instead of 4 Cooper pairs, I mean, instead of, you have half the Cooper pairs. So then this half Cooper pair electron gas is a topological superconductor in some way, in some sense, general sense, that you can have Majorana fermions trapped in their vortex or in lower dimension in their boundaries. So this is a new avenue to search for topological, Majorana non-abelian physics. So here, the challenge is that in order to realize this, you need very, very insulating topological insulator. Otherwise, your Majorana will leak into the bulk. You cannot trap it on the surface, so it will sneak out. So so there is another proposal that came from Princeton, experimental idea. This is valid, and many people are working on it. But there is the experimental discovery of superconductivity. This was not predicted in dope bismuth selenide, this copper dope bismuth selenide. It generated a lot of interest that what is the nature of superconductivity on the surface and on this topological insulators. And there are, so then in the beginning, the samples were not good, but now at least two Japanese groups have samples where your resistivity falls right down. This is a sample quality issue. It's a good superconductor. Now they have very high quality samples, so your resistivity falls right down. And we have been trying to do spectroscopy on the system and see what are the surface states doing even before you superconduct. Are they already degenerate because you have to dope? If they're already degenerate with the bulk, then you're out of luck. So this is what we did, that are you degenerate? What we found that it's quite remarkable, even though you are way into the bulk, it's quite remarkable that the surface is not, in fact, degenerate with the bulk. And we don't know why. It actually goes against LDR first principle calculation. So experimentally, we are finding that you are still protected from the bulk. So instead,
so you see coexisting the bulk states and a sharp surface.
Sharp surface states, relatively sharp. Yeah. Of course, there will be some scattering, some damping. So and the spins survive. So this spin momentum locking survives even if you have that bulk thing. So in this compound, the superconductivity is actually coming. What it confirmed, this experiment by Haar, is that it's in the bulk. It doesn't say anything about the surface. So first we wanted to see whether it's meaningful to do surface, because these are very challenging experiments again, whether it's meaningful to do that. So you first do the normal state, see that is the surface state surviving that level of doping. And it does survive, so that is very interesting. And then there is a theoretical a proposal by, I think, Fu and collaborators based on Andrea Ludwig's his periodic table D3. It may be their proposal is that this may be a realization of Ludwig's D3 type of topological superconductor. So they, based on the ARPES experiments, they place the value, the m over mu, this chemical this mass, Dirac mass over chemical potential in this regime. So so what needs to be now there is recent development from Japan. They are seeing some unrebound states. But the key experiment to do is whether this superconductor has odd parity order parameter. So then it would be an analog of superfluid helium-3b, electronic analog. So there's a lot of development, including in the spectroscopic frontier.
So it's fair to say at this point,
we still don't know because the odd parity has to, just seeing under Brown state, almost all superconductors show those things. But then if you take this under Brown state plus, if you believe spectroscopic parameters, then theoretically you can constrain that it has to be something like that. But just observation of the, there's more work to be done to confirm that. But this is a very promising frontier. I mean, all these are very interesting frontiers. So there's another direction we are pursuing that, as I mentioned in the beginning, there are at least 15 different types of topological insulators. And are there realizations of other things? Like the ones I showed, mostly they belong to the 1000 invariant class. They're strong topological insulators. Can we find a three-dimensional weak topological insulator? And that would be an analog of quantum spin hull layered version. And if we can find one, can we magnetize that thing? Then we can connect to quantum anomalous hull effect. And there's all sorts of exciting things. So one thing we identified is that this the first compound, it had this weak invariance, but this was an alloy, and it has this there's Dirac cone, but there's other stuff, so it's difficult to isolate in transport. But then this the GBT, germanium bismuth telluride 124, seems to, it's a crystal. It has single Dirac cone only, so this is much more promising compound. And the other thing is that just as in the bismuth antimony alloy, if you put, you can change the Bismuth antimony concentration to drive it topological to non-topological. In this case, you can also do that. So now we are trying to see how to drive it totally weak. Now it has a strong invariant, but reducing the spin orbit, we can drive it totally weak. So that would be very, very interesting. So this would, if we can do
some inversion that happens at gamma.
Inversions are happening, yes, on the sides. In bismuth antimony, the inversion, I have the diagram, let me get to that. So here. So GBT has this type of structure. So this is the parity product. So this point comes out to be negative. All others are positive.
And so it's. And you draw a transition where it's not at the negative one that's going through, that's changing. It's
somewhere else. Yeah. Now that I have three different atoms in the system, so there I have three much more tunability than.
See. So you can. Right. So you can.
I can. Right. So that's the idea. Yeah. So that was not possible with the binary. Okay. So then we are also interested. We are searching for a. Analog of antimony that can become superconductive, because antimony has a single Dirac cone, and the reason we are interested in that, because again, if you can find a superconductor whose surface, a normal state surface, already had a single Dirac cone, then you can then you have Majorana fermion on the surface. So then you don't have to go through the heterostructure and complicated other things. The nature material will give you that right away. So, but then this may belong to a different topological insulator class, a superconductor class. So there is one. And then this invariant class, with further engineering with chemists at Princeton, we can get to various different directions. And then the superconductors, there are more superconductors. We're not limited to bismuth selenide. There are, even at ambient pressure, you can have more superconductors. So those are our efforts in realizing the state just in the material. But then there is no reason we cannot also try to find other materials where the interfaces, heterostructure is also possible, right? So we have to find the right surface and bulk band structure. So then we identify the ternary class, a number of them, and then we can see that the lattice matching is also possible in some of these compounds. So the constraint is that I have to find not any topological insulator, like bismuth telluride, you cannot isolate the Dirac node. But in other compounds you do, but then that's not enough. You also have to find a matching magnet and superconductor lattice mat so that you can form the
magnets. Are insulators or are they?
So these are, at this point they're metals, but not because it could be just impurity metals. I mean, it's metal in the sense that the some of the TI semiconducting matrices are already experimentally metal. According to LDA, there should be a band gap. But of course, now I have magnetism, LDA is not that reliable. So it needs to be addressed experimentally whether how insulating can you get. So this is the one I announced. So we actually have a preprint on this. So this is the first, this is bismuth telluride in this axis. And then BTS 221, it's already divergent, and it's at 4 Kelvin, it's more insulating than silicon. So this is really insulating, and GS over GB is on the order of 1 or more. This is even for bulk samples. And here you can see that you can have, naturally, you can have Fermi level in the gap. That was not possible to start out. So how much time I have? 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so So then even on the bulk samples, surface contribution to transport is very large, 90%. So you can see very large quantum oscillations from the surface. These are coming from 2D carriers. And surface mobility is not, it's quite large compared to bismuth selenite, but it's not semiconducting heterostructures. But the advantage here is that if you grow a 100 nanometer film equivalent of this compound, so then you have to do MBF with three elements, which is a challenge. Then you'll have 10 to the 10 carriers, and the mobility will improve, hopefully, because your sample quality is better. Yeah.
Good question. When you place the contacts on the sample to do the electrical measurements, how do you know you're just isolating the surface states versus bulk conduction states?
Yeah, there is also bulk contribution. So then you measure the three-dimensionality of the signal, and that's how you isolate. It's not just by contact. And then there is the advantage over mercury telluride is that these compounds have very large gap, but then now they're also becoming insulating and mobility is getting better.
I suppose if you have an edge state and it's protected topologically, it shouldn't see the impurities. So
it should be a
very small. Almost like only the measurement that you will put will create some resistance.
Yeah.
But what you have inside, the circuit of your edge state should not create a lot of resistance since.
So these are 3D bulk, and they have their major chemical problem is that there are vacancies, and these vacancies move.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like gallium arsenide heterostructure you're looking at edge. You're just looking at the 3D bulk sample,
Can you isolate the edge state?
Not by experiment, by analysis that some signal has three-dimensional characters, some signal has two-dimensional characters.
And in the two-dimensional characters, you can show that resistivity is very low, and that in the
It's actually Ong. Ong is coming later. He will detail on that, so I don't want to keep his talk. But he's doing that through Hall transport by looking at by changing the magnetic field direction. And looking at
it's not like 1D, you still can get diffusive motion at the surface. Yeah. You can scatter the side, so it's still better if you have a clean surface.
So you have still backward scattering?
Not 180 degree, but it's 178 degrees.
Yeah, you have
pretty well.
Yeah. The side scattering is allowed. It's not only in 2D, that means edge, only then you're...
Okay, it's very naive, but I really thought one definition of topological protection is that you would not see impurity. So at least there is some kind of impurity.
No. It's only 180 degree one, not the side step.
It's different from 1D.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, in principle, if you have an infinite system, the conductance should get better and better the bigger you make it, but it's only a log.
Yeah.
Okay, so then there are also other candidate materials for potential superconductors we are trying to look at, but they all have kind of low TC. So finding a higher TC one would be interesting, but this is still better than, 5-half quantum Hall stuff is even far, it's at a much lower temperature, so it's not so bad. And then I think there is another exciting direction we are looking forward to get into, which we haven't gotten into yet, is proposed from here by Leon Ballens and Pessing, that the idea is very, to me, it's very exciting that what they're thinking is that it's very generic phase diagram. You have Coulomb interaction and then you have spin orbit. So far what I talked about is like here. you have so large spin orbit you have with topological insulator, topological band insulator, but then what if you also crank up your many body Coulomb interaction, at least on site about you? So then you get a competition between this Coulomb physics and spin orbit. So how much of the topological physics will survive? So they try to answer that question in this paper, that at least identify a material class where to look for it. So it turns out that this 4D, 5D oxides could be interesting, or some 4D oxides, where you have, by going to 4D, you're high Z, so your spin orbit is large, and also Coulomb interaction is weak. So then you, if there is no magnetic order, so you get some interesting phase around here. I think they call it topological Mott insulator, something like that. And I think there is a lot of groups trying to figure out, find a specific material realization where experiments can be possible. They have a proposal, but those experiments, those materials are difficult to work with. But I would compare that with Charlie Kane's bismuth antimony. It's very difficult to work with, but then experimentalists figured out some easier material, materials easier to work with. So even though the spirochlore iridates are not easy, but I think we'll figure out some interesting material where there's a lot of play. Okay, so I sort of come to my conclusion. So we are trying to probe this new type of 2D electron gas on the surface of topological, 3D topological insulators, and the samples are getting much more bulk insulating, and transport is becoming possible, and magnetization becoming possible. We can get to the topological phase transition regime and check this bulk boundary correspondence idea. That's the essence of topology. And there are candidates for topological superconductors, some promising results, but more work. And then, so much of my work is in this review with Charlie, 2010 review, but a lot of things happened after that. So I feel that within another year, there, it may be necessary to write an experimental review by itself. So, but this is, I think, is exciting frontier ahead. Thank you.
Okay, so we have some time for more discussion.
Actually, question. You have, again, this four-dimensional
ADS-CFD. So I have to connect to ADS-CFD in some
way,
right?
You think you can make it in the lab.
Yeah, well, I mean, so you have to find a Fermi surface that has spin texture unpaired like that. So this is time reversal symmetry. So the four-dimensional topological insulator will have a boundary of three-dimensional, so you have a bulk Fermi surface. And in principle, that exists. We have the technique to measure that. We can measure bulk Fermi surfaces, but they always come out to be not boundary of the four-dimensional universe, right?
You think you use extra-large dimension.
Oh, extra-large dimension, okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so
you compete with LHC, no mini black hole, but instead an extra.
I'd like to know about heavy fermions, because I heard a lot of heavy fermions that could be candidates for insulators, but superconductor, topological superconductor.
Yeah. Actually, I listed some. I listed one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But for those compounds, the problem is that the bulk would be too conducting, so that you would have trouble to isolate the edge states. Or what's the issue? Because I thought, like, if we would go through the paradigm.
What is the experimental issue now?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. So eventually, you always want to do some sort of transport, but spectroscopically. The experimental issue is that, can I get a surface so that I can do ARPES? And at least tell my transport colleague that this is interesting to study further, or improved materials that you should study. So this is how that's how it happened in 3D topological. The spectroscopists tell their colleagues that this is something interesting we should focus on improving, and then they improve, and then now it's becoming possible to do transport. So with topological superconductor candidates, the challenge is twofold. One is, do I have a surface that I can study, I can tell you spectroscopically that it is a likely place. The other challenge is low temperature. It's difficult to do ARPS below 1 Kelvin. So this might be possible, but these are currently not accessible. Yeah.
Any other questions?
I have a question about an interacting system. Have you thought about experimental signatures which would distinguish so-called topological?
Oh, signatures? Yeah. So I had my crazy imagination based on Leon's paper, is that the prediction is that on a 3D topological insulator cane type, you have a 2D electron gas I can study with ARPS, right? The signature is spin momentum locking and all that. But in this case, there's a very fascinating idea that you could have deconfinement or fractionalization. In other words, on the surface of a topological Mott insulator, you can have spin 2D spin on gas. So what I hope to do someday is that spectroscopically, I mean, I'll then tell you something about transport, that if you can do grazing incidence neutron scattering, then you could look at single spin-on topological surface state, but you could look at two spin-on thing. So then you need a crystal. Since you have to go grazing, you need a large surface area. So then you could look at the inelastic scattering channel and say that there's a two spin on continuum, like in 1D spin chains, Heisenberg chains. So that's spectroscopic way. On the transport, you could try to think of some sort of Nernst or some sort of thermal transport and see that the spins are contributing to entropy, current, or things like that. I mean, Leon can tell you more, I guess.
Thermal transport is something which is very challenging.
Yeah, that's, again, you have to isolate surface and...
That was neutron scattering. I mean, when you do bulk, you already need gram, so how be able to make so much of that?
Yeah, with SNS or high flux neutron reactors, now you can, since you already have a lot coming, so you can focus the beam, you can afford to focus, so you can still, neutron reflectivity is done. It's just that doing that in the inelastic channel with a momentum and with a moment flip, spin flip, and all that stuff is whether we have the cross section. Someone has to calculate and see with. Once we know the cross section, then we can figure out that what would be the surface area needed to get a reasonable signal to noise.
So one comment was that so I think in Leon's proposal the bulk is gapless.
Bulk is gapless, but bulk is not magnetic, right? Neutron will not.
So still it's going to contaminate all the thermal transport thermal transport.
That's going to be complicated for transport, but for neutron I can isolate whether something
similar to. I mean, the bulk is always gapless thermally because they're always phonons. It's not such a different.
No, here's something more.
No, it's the same. It's almost the same as phonons, actually.
The energy scale is different.
Well, phonon with neutron, we can isolate. That's no problem. Any other bulk channel, there's no problem. Yes.
Yeah. So if you had a 3D topological superconductor with Majorana surface states. So these things are neutral, so how would they couple to your photon if you were to do that?
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is that you have to do some sort of point contact type spectroscopy, look at the undrived bound state. So what I'm offering is that spectroscopically you can tell a lot before you actually try to do the hard experiments. You can constrain what are the possibility, like spectroscopically, I can tell you that if this one has odd parity, I mean, you know, you can get a lot of, you can learn a lot. This is the story of ARPES on high-KC superconductors. You can learn a lot about mechanism and the order parameter symmetry and all sorts of things. So this is what I'm offering here, that you can learn a whole lot about the nature of the surface states and the gap and this, all that stuff. And so you can isolate, but.
So you're studying the bulk, basically. But would
you actually? No, on the surface. You can see surface superconducting gap and whether there is states inside the gap or not. The picture I have drawn, this can be done with ARPES. So in this case, so this is the case two, is the interesting case. So whether there are states inside the gap, that you can tell. So then you know that this belongs to that class, but this is not. This is still interesting for a different reason, right? But then, of course, eventually, I mean, even point contact, I would not believe that for Majorana. Eventually, I want to see a statistics experiment. You have to prove non-abelian thing, and that is a further challenge. So there are all levels of, and then you have to find a way to manipulate that in some way.
Any other discussion? All right, let's start.